Hey babe, happy new year. Looks like we made it, I guess. Listen, I know we're in the middle of our yoga ethics series, but I'm just so tired from all this living. What an endurance test, my gosh. I've been focusing mostly on my Patreon, so we'll be returning with our usual programming soon here on the free feed. After this episode, I'll be picking up on the yummers and niyummers. We'll be addressing hoarding and greed and scarcity mindset. But today, I'm going to give you a little amuse-bouche of the Patreon with a full-length episode that's usually reserved for the patrons of the arts. This is the first in a series of four recaps of the HBO Max documentary series Breath of Fire, which delves into the cult insanity of Kundalini Yoga and its leaders, the old school and the new, Yogi Bhajan and Guru Jagat, who was a big personality here on the Los Angeles scene and who went down in a blaze of conspiracy theories. So please enjoy this Patreon episode. If you like it, you can find the rest of the series over at patreon.com/thisbodypodcast. Good morning, my beloved patrons. 6:30 a.m. and I'm up, and this episode's not really ready. These are the first words that I've uttered today, as you can hear in my voice. Merry Crisis, Happy Chrysler. Oh, it is all aliens and drones over here. If you're listening from outside of America, I don't know how to describe what it's like. I'm like disassociated, I think. I don't feel particularly worried about aliens or drones. In fact, I think being a part-time desert dweller, I've become quite comfortable with the notion. You see things out in the desert sky a lot. Elon Musk plays around out there with his toys. And there was one night I was out there and I'd only just gotten my house. And I was stoned and I was standing out in my backyard marveling at God's night sky and the Milky Way and whatnot. And then I saw these lights in the sky and it was this long line of lights, went on for a long time. People were yelling. I could hear people yelling across the desert. What the fuck is this? Turned out it was that Starlink thing. And nobody tells you shit here. Stuff just happens. I have this really vivid visualization that comes to me often when I'm outside at night in the desert in my house of just imagining aliens wandering up to me in my backyard. And it doesn't seem crazy at all. And they say, in my imagination, they are really nice and friendly or just like quite benign. And as I was making my coffee just now, hold on, just need a little sip. I was thinking, well, I don't really mind like what happens as long as they're not hostile, as long as they don't take me from my creature comforts, from my Italian coffee maker and my milk fluffer and my Rodecaster and what I use here to talk to you, as long as they don't take these things away from me, I'm fine with whatever happens. But then I did flash to the notion that they could pick me up off the face of the earth and put me on some awful planet to mine for some weird mineral that we don't know about here but is very pertinent to life in space or in other dimensions, and that could be my life. Lucky for me, I have no kids to worry about, so no, you know, it ends with me. But that's not how I want to go out. I don't want to be like one of those actors in, what's the new Alien movie? Alien, not Prometheus, but the new one. You know what I'm talking about. I don't want to be one of them, just, you know, without meaning. And thus, here I am sitting down at my Rodecaster because this podcast has given my life such a great focus and another source of meaning this year. You who have been with me since the beginning, we've been together for a year, babe. Happy anniversary. Oh, that is a crazy noise at 6:30 in the morning. But yeah, it's been a year and I'm proud and I really feel like my brain has improved from doing this podcast and having this commitment and doing research and delving into topics that just interest me. Like, it's kind of a rare thing. I mean, I guess not if you're a man. Sorry, Ben, I know you're probably listening. You're one of my favorites, but men generally don't have much of a problem prioritizing what they enjoy and what their needs are, and they're quite good at, you know, putting themselves front and center. But women, even women who don't have kids, even women that aren't in marriages, I know this is all very gender conforming, but there you go. I'm 45. I have some they friends, but I'm very feminine. I'm a very woman. I am not a they. I'm not on that spectrum at all. So that's what I'm speaking to. Wait, what was I even talking about? God damn it. See, it's too early in the morning. Aliens. I don't know, babes. Oh, yeah, needs met. So, this is great. This is really great coffee. It's Vietnamese churro coffee. It's so creative here, you know. People just make these really fusion-y products. But anyway, digressing again, already losing the thread of what I was saying. It's really good to do something that just interests you. That's what I have really actualized this year in a very rhythmic and planned kind of way. And when I do these episodes, I have like copious notes, and I do have a ton of notes for this episode, but I haven't finished. Like, usually at this stage, I would go to a cafe this morning, sit down with all this shit, read it all through and put it into some semblance of order and then arrange my thoughts. But, you know, one of the things that I'm really not comfortable with is going off script. And I know that this year I also said that I was going to make some yoga video practices, and I went as far as making a couple of demos. I bought a really great little microphone that, you know, the girlies and the kids use for their TikToks. Oh my God, can you fucking believe that they might be taking TikTok away from us? I will literally KMS. But I might actually, I'm going to do, you know, I might do a blog for you guys with my like TikTok retrospective. So I was going through my saved videos the other day and like just lolling, like what a time. But oh my God, see, I've done it again. This is why you need notes. Right. So I was going to make these yoga videos to go along with the Yoga Ethics for Modern Living series, and I don't like it. I don't like video. I never have. When all the social media shit came along in the early 2000s, I remember I was working at my tattoo studio in Auckland, and we had like this big crew of people all doing different things, and there was like the youngest would have been a teenager, the oldest would have been 40, I guess. And I remember one day this thing MySpace cropped up and the young ones were talking about it, and I was like, what's that? And they said, it's a page where you have your picture and you have your friends there, and there's, you can put music on it, and then you like post stuff about you. And I was like, Well, that's fucking stupid. Who would do that? That's really, really vain. And here we are. It's been 20 years. And here we fucking are. And I have never liked mugging for a camera. I don't like video. I had kind of like this traumatic childhood. My mother and her cousin were both mentally ill but highly creative. And hold on. Oh my gosh, you guys, if you like this show, you should join me over on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and join up for Extra Body. You'll get early access to episodes, 2 bonus episodes a month, random drops here and there, and access to old seasons. Oh my god, this churro coffee is so good. I have to also chase it up with my vape pen, which I hope I have in my pajama pocket here. Yes, I do. So, as a child, my mother and her cousin would dress me up in all kinds of, like, just weird ensembles, but it kind of looked like the September issue of Vogue mixed with, like, child pornography. And it had like sophisticated Lolita vibes, but like, no, well, there was one nude photo shoot, but I'll talk about that some other time. Yes, yes. But yeah, it was not sensual and sexual, but it was also like beautiful and creative. There was like a weird way that an echelon of society looked at youth, I guess. Well, I mean, you've read Nabokov, right? So I was fucking traumatized by just, I'd be like living my life, watching the Smurfs on TV, and then I would just get plucked out of that, put in some sort of hat and scratchy jacket with nothing underneath and a flower, and then just be told to like pose for hours. And it just fucking sucked. And that obviously did not endear me to making video content. I know how to take a fucking photo though. So there's that. But yeah, I never enjoyed video. Whenever I was interviewed for things, I used to be like a girl about town in New Zealand because of the business that I was in, the tattoo shop. And I had all these artsy friends, and I was a manager and kind of a mouthpiece for these artists. And sometimes I would have to do videos for like the news and shit like that. And I fucking hated it. I would just get like other people to do it. My ex was very good. Funny how some people like talking about themselves to a camera, and then some people just like sitting in a studio with a microphone. We're not the same. They're not like us. So it's been a year and I've never attempted to recap a show. It seems like a hell of a lot of work, and it is. It is, I discovered. But I thought for Christmas I would give this a shot. This is a 4-part, I thought it was 3 parts, but it's a 4-part documentary series. So it's a nice Christmas present. It's called Breath of Fire, and it's on HBO Max, or just Max. I mean, are we ever going to call it HBO? No. Are we ever going to call it Max? It's kind of like Twitter. Nobody's ever going to call that stupid thing X. Nobody's even on that thing, are they? I made an account for the podcast, but I just can't be fucked with all that noise. Loserville, USA over there. But anyway, Breath of Fire. It's on Max, and it is about this chick, Katie Griggs, who called herself Guru Jagat. And, okay, hold on. I need more coffee. So I knew all about Guru Jagat well before she became famous like this. spoiler alert. It's not a spoiler alert because if you know this person, you know that she died. She's exactly the same age as me. I'm an East Sider. She's a West Sider in LA. And she was a yoga teacher, a Kundalini yoga teacher. So I've always been like side-eyeing Kundalini. I've always known that something was awry over there. Bunch of white people in turbans, very like brainwashy Hare Krishna vibes. But during our fraught times, during COVID, the LA wellness community was absolutely bonkers. Like, 1 minute you think everyone's sane, and then like COVID happens overnight and the rug gets pulled out, and all of a sudden all these people that you follow on your fucking yoga Instagram are posting about, oh my God, just the craziest shit. You know, it started with Forever Chemicals, which is legit, but like, can we just not, because we're all locked in our houses, so now's not really the most opportune time to replace all my cookware. And you know, all these people were about yoga, or so I thought, but it actually was more like, we're all conspiracy theorists now. I don't know how everyone else remembers this, but my life just fell to bits. It just cracked open and fell to bits instantly, like overnight. A lot of friendships broke down. So many businesses just collapsed instantly. Marriages just broke up. Like, I remember there was this couple, and for some weird reason, in my twilight zone alone at home, I fantasized about like when this would all be over, we would go to this couple's house and they would have a party and the husband would DJ and everything would be nice. Like, it was a weird fantasy because I had never even been to their house. Anyway, they got a fucking divorce pretty immediately. He moved to like West Virginia, disappeared into the woods. So yeah, all these yoga teachers were just posting all day and all night about Teflon pots. And I remember there was this lady, Christiane Northrup, who I was really obsessed with. Like, I was hate following her for lols because it was just like a lot of fun. She was kind of like a Marianne Williamson type, but she went so crazy and she started telling people. Remember when people started getting the first shot and then the naysayers were like, you can't even be near those people because the shot is like, I can't remember what, like leaking out of them or whatever. And it's going to get into your ovaries and that'll like kill your eggs. So like you can't be around your husband anymore. However, Christiane Northrup came up with this really brilliant, I mean, next level clever remedy for getting rid of the leakage. There was a word for it. I can't remember, a pseudoscientific word, but yeah, she was like, you need to go and get a big bottle of peppermint Dr. Bronner's soap, and then you need to go to like a feed bin where you buy stuff for animals to eat, and you buy like all this rabbit, I think it was like rabbit pellets or this grass, or maybe a bit of both. Maybe it was like tons of pellets and tons of rabbit grass. And then you go home. I might be missing a few key components here, but this was, I know these ingredients were involved. And then you're supposed to have a scalding hot bath, like boiling hot, with all the Dr. Bronner's, all the rabbit pellets, and all the grass. And that meant you could maybe fuck your husband again? Unclear. But I was watching a lot of her and hearing a lot about Guru Jagat. So, yeah, Guru Jagat. I don't know if I should say how I found out about her death. Well, yeah, I might as well complete this story before we get into the recap so we have a little bit of background. She sucks. I sucked. I would say RIP, but I literally do not give a fuck. So glad you're dead, honestly. And I know that's harsh, but like some people should die. That's just unconscious knowledge. She pissed me off. And it's actually possible that there is a bit of mirroring going on, right? Because if somebody fucks you off so much, you got to look in the mirror. Or do you? Because perhaps after this documentary series recap, you might agree with me. This chick fucking sucked. She taught on the West Side. I never went to any of her classes. There's this place, or was this place, over in Venice called Rama Institute. And it was the Kundalini outpost of LA. And, you know, the longer that you live in LA, the more accepting you get of just like whatever. Like when I first moved here, people would talk to me about like my star sign and astrology all the time. And I'd just be like, what are you fucking wasting conversation space for? Like, this is just nonsense. Like, can you please get a grip? But now I'm like, oh yes, Mercury's in retrograde. That's why my internet's not working. Or Mercury is retrograde. Mercury doesn't go into retrograde. It retrogrades. See, I know that now. But yeah, like shit like that, you just start to accept. So it's all vibes. It's all like tapping into whatever, anything goes. And these Kundalini people started to just kind of look like part of the furniture to me. But it always annoyed me, especially being a yoga teacher and somebody who I'm on a spiritual path most of the time. And I have a thirst for knowledge and truth and my own personal agency, right? So Kundalini fucking annoys me. Any kind of anything that involves a guru can suck it. I don't believe in gurus. I believe in teachers that can show you something about yourself, show you your own capabilities, and then step away. So you can like go along the path of life to your next teacher or your next teachings. I do not believe in enlightened people, honestly. I believe in wisdom, but I don't believe in like a lightning bolt enlightenment. I've never met somebody who, you know, claims to be enlightened who is also not a fucking psycho, corrupt, manipulative narcissist. And that's just my truth. And that's, so, you know, hearing about this chick, Katie, who called herself Guru Jagat, who had this big personality, who cursed a lot in classes, who barely even lifted a finger to do yoga. She was very heavy set. She wasn't a healthy person. And she wasn't the kind of person, like she would just sit up there and talk mostly and then do lots of breath work, which is just sitting there doing breath work. It's not the same as like a vigorous practice, though obviously it has a lot of merit. I love breath work. I do it most mornings when I remember, just to like flip my mood and get things moving. But it's such a really, really, really effective manipulation tool if you want to use it on somebody, because you can change people's how they feel. You can make them happy when they felt sad, and that is too powerful to attribute to another person, right? That's like something that you can learn to do for yourself, but you shouldn't be outsourcing that. And people who are teaching it should not be positioning themselves as you know, part and parcel of what you need to get there, baby. So Guru Jagat, she taught Kundalini classes. She had this big following of literal idiots. All the celebs, real dorky celebs, Russell Brand, Alicia Keys, Kate Hudson, Jennifer Aniston. And then she also had this podcast. She certainly had no problem being on camera, though she should have. Hers was on camera. It was called Reality Riffing. Prior to the pandemic, and I never even listened to it. I only listened to it after she died. But prior to the pandemic, it was just like wellness bullshit and like her talking her bullshit, her very didactic. People called her highly charismatic, but to me, she just seemed highly irritating and full of herself. She would just talk her talk. But then when the pandemic happened, she was pretty much like the first person to like lose her shit completely. And she had this guy, David Icke. I don't know if you remember him. I barely remember him because I didn't really go down that rabbit hole, but he was, I don't know, really problematic person. He might have been the one that told everybody to take horse. What the fuck was it? Ivermectin. Horse deworming. Possibly. I don't know. Anyway, he was mental and he was on her podcast and they were talking about fucking all kinds of shit, just crazy shit, really adding to the hysteria. She didn't close Rama. She kept it going. She had everybody doing, like, packing people in to do Kapalabhati breathwork, huffing and puffing and blowing it all down. She sucked. And she just got, like, crazier and crazier and, like, was posting a lot of stuff. And every day was, like, some new thing. And then one day I woke up and she was dead. She died at, like, 43 or 44 years old because she went to Germany, decided, you know, this pandemic does not apply to me. And she's just like been slowly ramping up, getting more and more insane. Her and her husband, this younger man, went to Germany together to do, I don't know, I guess they just couldn't sit still. I definitely noticed that a lot of really wealthy people could not sit still. And it was very interesting because you would think that they would welcome it, right? Like they have nice homes, they have creature comforts. But I guess one of the hallmarks of being wealthy is that you're always hungry and you're never fucking happy. So anyway, she goes over to Germany, breaks her ankle. They say, do not fly because you're at risk of like deep vein thrombosis. And she was, you know, really overweight, like 200 pounds or something. And these are all comorbidities. So she like, yeah, she comorbided. She like got on a plane, got a blood clot, came back to America. I think that's what happened. She died here. Yeah. So she died. And it was like, whoa, whoa. I think that was in August. And like the pandemic started in, I think it had been like 6 months or something. I know it's really insane to be like, yay, when someone dies, but that has never happened to me before. I have never disliked somebody so much that their untimely passing filled me with like, just, yeah. I guess that's probably like how the whole world is feeling about Brian Thompson, CEO of United Healthcare. Like nobody gives a shit about him. I don't give a shit about him, but I also don't feel like the vitriol that I feel about Katie Griggs. So it's got to be something to do with me. It's got to be. Am I jealous? Do I want people to think of me as a guru? Fuck no. I don't want to be fucking working that hard. Jesus. It's like so much being at work and so much talking to groups of people. I can barely teach my yoga classes. It's like, oh my God, so challenging to get up there some days.
Jesus Christ.
But anyway, that's a 30-minute intro to the recap of this episode. Let's begin.
Okay, now begin.
So we start with the Naked and Famous song. What is that song? Yeah, 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 yeah. We're only young in life still. We require different skills. Fuck, what is that song? The lyrics are really cool for the beginning of this because it's like this naive song about being young and naive. And it also sets this bouncy kind of millennial-y tone for this documentary, and everything is light and white. You can smell the Palo Santo. It opens on Katie Griggs, Guru Jagat, wearing a Joy Division t-shirt, a black office jacket, mala beads, and a turban. A turban. And a long white skirt and motorcycle boots. And she's speaking at the Wanderlust event in Los Angeles, which is like this huge, I don't even know if it's still going now, but it's like kind of the mega, mega goop of wellness. They used to have a really big space in Hollywood, though I think they might have lost it in the pandemic. And people would come from all around. It was like all the chic teachers, all the aspirational teachers. It's a real look to it, very Los Angeles energy. So she's there at Wanderlust. She has a headset on and she's talking. And she's talking about reality. She says, reality is a trance. Your reality is a trance of your own making or someone else's who may not have your best interests at heart. So this article came out, and this is the article is what this documentary is based on. It was in Vanity Fair. I was reading it as it came out. The Second Coming of Guru Jagat came out before she died. She was already in some hot water. The Vanity Fair article came out, which was quite an expose. And then Vice did an article about her fucked up business practices. But getting ahead of myself here. Anyway, so coming back to the beginning, she's talking about her lineage and Kundalini, and she uses the word technology. And you hear technology applied a lot in Kundalini yoga. Not referring to gadgets and stuff, but more like the advanced technology of these teachings and how they transform your life. So we're just getting to know her, and we're seeing these talking heads. People are talking and saying that she was such a leader, a teacher, a true guru.
The first minute and a half of listening to Guru Jagat speak, I was like, whoa, wow, this is my teacher.
She is very charismatic. She has a way of talking to people where it feels like she's down to earth and she understands you, but she's not going to give you bullshit kind of thing.
She built a multi-million dollar brand. Guru Jagat spoke at Harvard Divinity School about money being an important, or possibly the most important part of spiritual growth. So she was really into this prosperity crap. That's like a really good warning sign, right? For any spiritual group, for any seeker joining a spiritual group. If somebody's talking about God wants you to be rich, he wants you to have material things, I mean, hello, that's the devil falling with your best laid plans. Yeah, and so she wore this turban, and her turban was always very haphazardly tied with her hair falling out of it, which is a really offensive thing. She was always talking about her direct relationship to Yogi Bhajan. Now, Yogi Bhajan was the dude who introduced Kundalini yoga to America. Spoiler alert again. He just made it up back in the 60s. He absolutely cherry-picked from like Buddhism and his own Sikh culture. He was born in Pakistan, so he was a Pakistani Sikh. He came to America in the 60s, and yeah, he made up his technology. And people in America were just, you know, back in the day when somebody came over from the East, they were very receptive because of the exoticism of it. These days we would talk about the fetishization of like the other. And I mean, you hear it a lot and how that's very dehumanizing. But then there are people like Yogi Bhajan who don't give a shit about being dehumanized because they're barely human themselves. So he was like the capitalist guru, and he saw that he could easily manipulate these dum-dums. He formed his 3HO, which means like happy, healthy, whole. H-O? Whole? Can't be whole because that would be H-O-L-E. Happy, healthy and horny and holy. Holy, that's the one. He formed that. And then the offshoots for that, he made Yogi Tea, which you may be familiar with. That's like a huge, huge multi-million dollar thing still going now, sold in Whole Foods, sold at Trader Joe's. You shouldn't buy it, but they do the best tea. They do chai rooibos like no one else. It's divine. Wrong choice of words. Okay, he also had Akal Security, which was, I don't know if it's still going, but it was, you know, a big time security. Sikh people in India, Punjab and Pakistan, there is an element of fight to their religion. So they have these sacred symbols. One of them is a knife that they can carry with them at all times. And they, if you draw that knife, it means that you're going to use it. I can't really remember like the whys and hows of why they are like, why this is. But yeah, the idea of security, I guess, kind of works. So he had Akal Security. And now we are introduced to who were involved in this. The producers of this documentary, they seem to have rented some sort of Sonoran desert minimalist home to conduct the interviews. I'm sure it's in LA, maybe Silver Lake. Very beautiful, very bare, neutral tones. But yeah, we get to meet the people who fell for this shit. I mean, it couldn't be me. I was around in LA, obviously, when she was doing her bullshit, and I just felt like anyone who was into Kundalini was very silly indeed. But they took themselves so seriously. We meet Nicole, a woman in her 30s who was Katie's personal assistant. She talks about moving to LA in her 20s and going through a quarter-life crisis and trying to find herself. And then we meet Charlotte, who I follow on TikTok. She's a good follow. Can't remember her last name, but you'll be able to find her if you Goog. Mind you, TikTok's going away apparently, so maybe not. Charlotte was the director of marketing at Rama. She moved to LA in her 20s, also seeking, also trying to find herself. Then we meet Jules, who is a former Kundalini teacher. When she got involved, she had lost 6 family members. They just all dropped dead, and she was dealing with that grief. We then meet Elizabeth, a 33-year-old bookkeeper who had broken up with her partner at the time and wanted to make a fresh start. And everyone talks about wanting purpose and loving yoga and spirituality and coming to California to find themselves. They were all into like psychedelic experiences, Burning Man. Millennials aren't satisfied with existing spiritual paths. They want like a bespoke spiritual routine. And I totally get that. And when I cast my mind back to when I was in my 20s, I mean, it's possible. It's possible that I could have fallen in just because of that, you know, the wandering spirit and the seeking and knowing that there's something out there that's more community oriented and that, well, maybe not knowing, maybe just hoping, community, belonging. I don't even remember the first time I took a Kundalini class, but it was so very much part of the yoga landscape that it was definitely like one of the very first yoga classes I ever took back in the 90s. And it's been, you know, woven through modern yoga ever since modern yoga. Since the 60s, right? So I've definitely taken a bunch of Kundalini classes. And on the west side of LA, you can really go nuts with your bullshit and people will just totally listen to it. One of the ladies was like, I'm ready to go to Harry Potter school. And it's literally like that. Like, people will be like, oh, you're going to Harry Potter school? Cool. What do you want at Erewhon? So yeah, Rama, It was the watering hole for LA influencers and a hub of creative people, because one thing that you do have in LA are the most creative people, the most talented people. Like, that's what's fucking amazing. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're like wise or sane, but they are very, very good at certain things. So Rama was this hub for people who were all seeking, were very creative, talented in their fields. But yeah, let's talk about Kundalini and what it is. It is a very frenzied and frenetic and disturbing kind of practice. It's three things. It's like meditations, breath work, and then like repetitious movements. So where hatha yoga is kind of like choreographed in a way that flows, Kundalini is just very, it feels very 1.0 to me. Like, they get you to do a movement over and over and over and over and over again.
Like a frog squat. Babes, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to rate, share, and subscribe. You can listen on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And you can find me at Sophia.
When you've done a class, you feel like you've taken pops. Like, you're not actually in your right mind. You shouldn't really drive. You certainly shouldn't sit and listen to somebody lecture for 45 minutes afterwards, which is what Katie Griggs used to do, because you're in a very open, receptive state. And that's what you call a cult. Russell Brand said that hatha yoga is like pot and Kundalini yoga is like crack. And then we see Russell, that fucking idiot. So he's in maybe his home. He's naked except for a white sheet around his waist. He's wearing a long dangly necklace. His hair is in a man bun. He's doing his Jesus cosplay. Isn't it so very interesting, by the way, that now that Russell Brand has been accused of multiple sexual assaults during his drug addict, sex addict years, I mean, do you think he did it? Now he's got all this coming at him. He's leaning all the way into Christianity, and now he's a God banger, and he got baptized, and he's wearing his Y fronts and baptizing other people. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that clever? Not that clever, that it seems clever that he might be able to kind of sidestep this by embracing Christianity all the way back to 1.0. Anyway, that's one way to avoid taking responsibility. Get baptized and just say it was all before you found your Lord and Savior. That asshole. I'll say that one thing that he has going for him is his cunning. But he's long since lost his thinking fan base. Who is even listening to that moron these days? Probably millions of other morons. Anyway, he's wearing his stupid outfit and touting the benefits of Kundalini. One of the things that they did was wear only white to expand their aura by exactly 1 foot. The turban, the idea behind a turban is to cover the crown chakra, which is on top of your head. I mean, chakras, that's like another thing that we could talk about. They're energy centers in the body. You journey through them during meditations, whether they actually exist or not. That's a scientific question, right? But like, it's a place to bring your awareness, and it's a place where you can like feel certain energies if you think about it. Like a throat chakra, for example, I used to feel like when I was younger, my throat was always really, really tight because I wasn't able to speak my truth. There was no space for that. So I was angry as fuck, and my throat was always tight, and I was always getting like bronchitis and throat infections, and my rage would come out in my sleep, and I'd wake up and I would have like scratched my face and I would be bleeding, like it was like a horror movie. And then once I was able to start expressing myself better and the antagonistic things in my life that were causing me to repress my words were gone, my throat started to soften and everything changed. So, and I did like, you know, throat chakra meditations. I did not feel the need to wear a scarf around my throat to protect my throat chakra, but this is the vibe with the turban. I had this wealthy friend for a while during the pandemic. She existed in an entirely different echelon of living. And when I'd invite her to come to yoga with me, she'd say, oh no, I only go to this one studio. It's all the way over on the west side. It's like an hour's drive from us. And I was like, why? What for? Because in my opinion, there's no need to drive an hour for a good yoga class. Because over on our side of town, we have great studios. But yeah, she was just into that cult. She was into Kundalini, and she even confessed that she'd done the Kundalini teacher training but never utilized it. So there is this type of person, often a person with money and time, but lack of direction. If you look at like the hierarchy of needs, right, that we talked about on, I don't know, one of the other podcasts, once you have your basic needs met, it means that now you have this time for your self-actualization. But yeah, so these people can often have an urge to actualize themselves, actualize their creativity and their spirituality. But yeah, too much time and money, that's a slippery slope in Los Angeles, where things like facts and science are very bendable and posable. And, you know, it's nice to be high without drugs. So people gravitate towards those natural highs. So Guru Jagat, she'd lecture after getting everyone all high. And of course, she sold courses. She was one of the earlier adopters of social media. The courses are all about being successful via mantras and meditation and Kundalini yoga. Yeah, I'm quite familiar with chanting for things that you want. I used to, I almost got sucked into this cult, Nietzsche and Buddhism, in Hollywood when I first got here. Lots of people use chanting to get what they want. It's kind of like spell casting. I never used a chant for a specific reason other than to just like calm down, clear my mind. But yeah, we see Guru Jagat sitting on a sheepskin. For some reason, you have to sit on a white sheepskin, something to do with your probably your ass chakra. And then like big pictures on the walls of the guru, what's his name? Guru Bhajan. And she was really into the gong. So she had like a big giant gong. And then we just hear lots of talk about how charismatic she was. I could not see this at all. One of the girls describes her as having Regina George from Mean Girls energy.
So you'll see all sorts of different levels of fitness, all the way to my level of fitness, which is I'm just going to sit here in my nightgown, tell you what to do. All right, so there's lots of options. You'll have all sorts of modifications.
She had like that Regina George vibe.
That is the ugliest effing skirt I've ever seen. Love ya.
She was just like, no filter.
You could be having a 13th dimensional orgasm, and I hope you are. There are such things.
So she'll swear.
Bitch out. Shitting bullshit. Shit.
She'll have funny jokes.
Usually by lunch, you want to punch each other in the face. Satnam.
You felt like you knew her, and you also felt like she was just this essence. And so to be able to experience that, it was almost like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening.
So there's a type of person who gets besotted by this kind of fake guru. And it's a lot to do with your station in life, I guess. But there's no universe in which I would meet Katie Griggs and find anything about her spiritual or attractive or charismatic. She was bolshy and loud, and she swore during her lectures. And, you know, when I think about it, this is probably different for American women because America is really retrograde when it comes to how a woman should behave. Women are still apologizing here after like every sentence and really dealing with very 1.0 women's issues like the right to an abortion and the right to exist and stuff. So it's like this nation is still in its infancy, even though it's been around for a while. Same as New Zealand. New Zealand's about the same age, but pretty different down there in the Antipodes. Much earthier stance on equality. But it's weird watching these talking heads because there's this middle-aged woman who would have been a lot older than Guru Jagat, and she's talking about how entranced she was by the cursing and the wry jokes and like this kind of rock and roll. They keep talking about how she has like a rock and roll attitude. I mean, whatever, you guys. She doesn't look very rock and roll to me, but who am I to say? So her physical presence is what makes it obvious to me that she was not someone to follow, right? The turban, the white clothing. So it's also the silly way that she'd put it all together, trying to make it look rock. She was dripping in like hippie jewelry. Her hair was everywhere. Flowing white outfits. All very red flaggy to me because, I've been to India. I've been to Punjab. I've visited the Golden Temple in Amritsar, which is like the spiritual, it's the temple for Punjabi Sikhs. And I lived with a man whose family was Sikh. And I know what the turban is about. And I know that a white chick wearing a Muslim rag on her head with her hair shooting out of it isn't it. There is a difference between cultural appropriation and appreciation, and that's something that we really need to hash out so much further. Woke culture needs to be fleshed out a little bit more, in my opinion. In my 20s, I got a lot of Japanese tattoos, like traditional Japanese style. Well, actually not traditional. I went for like the 70s hybrid. So I don't have like the full traditional sleeves and stuff. I have like a tattoo culture hybrid. But in later years, I have thought about it from a cultural perspective. And ultimately, I am totally at peace with my choice because in my opinion, Japanese tattoos are the most beautiful aesthetically. And they have the most universal symbolism to me. I also wore this incredible pink and purple sari to a wedding in Mumbai. And that was lovely and appreciated, and I appreciated it. People like it when you seek to appreciate and understand respectfully, but people hurt when their culture is taken and abused and capitalized on. That's a very wide discussion, and I do want to delve into it in another dedicated episode, but I'll just say that these days the pendulum is too far east of Eden and we need to find a balance so that we can be one world with respect. I remember these mornings, I get up really early, and in India I would go up to the roof and have my coffee, and you could see people up there on their roofs brushing out their long hair, oiling their hair, and then tying their turbans with like such precision and such like orthodoxy. It's religious. It's serious. So by the time I got to LA when I was like 34, my bullshit detector was award winning. And when I did my own teacher training, I was old enough to have developed beyond the physical high of 1,000 frog squats and into the realm of like trauma-informed movement. And one of the roots of a lot of people's trauma is cultural appropriation and being made to feel a certain way due to their skin color or their culture, things like that. So in my first year here, I used to go with a friend to this lady's house in Silver Lake once a week for Kundalini because it was really cheap and I didn't have any money. And this woman, she was Leonardo DiCaprio's stepmother or something. I've seen her in some Getty images on the red carpet since then. And I'd see her at Lassen's in her white robes and turban. And I would always think, I mean, that's a choice, you know. You can take all that stuff off and pass for a white woman and move through whatever space you like, but a real Sikh is seen very, very differently to that. There's no taking off brown skin, for example. So I thought it was pretty embarrassing. Like, be yourself, babe. And when it comes to wellness, Guru Jagat did not look healthy. She was heavy. She got heavier. She didn't actually do the yoga. She just sat on her sheepskin and ministered. And in this way, she was very much a reincarnation of her own guru, Yogi Bhajan, who died of congestive heart failure, who didn't move his body, who sat atop a throne and rambled to his whiteys and had the most disgusting diet ever. One of the things that he liked was to put leftover, like day-old Taco Bell in a blender. Oh my God, I'm going to be sick. Then our viewing is interrupted by a brief explainer of Kundalini Yoga, as taught by Yogi Bhajan, rapist, thief, child abuser, and beloved guru of American idiots. Satnam. That is the greeting. Hello, goodbye. Whatever. Satnam. Kundalini is an ancient yogic technology made up of a set of kriyas, movement, chanting, and breathwork. If you want something, there's a kriya for that.
Looking to overcome addiction? There's a kriya for that. Want to find love, a better job, make more money? There's a kriya for that. In Kundalini, we wear all white to expand our aura by exactly 1 foot. We cover our head to focus the energy of the third eye. And we abstain from recreational drugs and alcohol. In Kundalini, we get high on our own supply.
So in essence, Kundalini is taught by Yogi Bhajan as a all-encompassing way of life. And people really believed in Guru Jagat. It's like watching children imprint when you're watching this documentary. They had a band, White Sun. White Sun won a Grammy because in LA people are really talented. And Yogi Bhajan used to say that if 2% of the world practiced Kundalini yoga, it would have this ripple effect and we would have world peace, blah, blah, blah.
Lie down in peace and harmony with your straight legs and breathe deeply the divine power of the force.
So Katie Griggs comes on and she's talking about her relationship to Yogi Bhajan. She's talking about the massive canon of teachings that he brought to us and how it's our job to activate the codes. Anytime I hear people talking about codes and the universe and shit, I know that we're in dodgy territory.
Delivering this canon of teachings that, as he said, those who hold these teachings and the powers of these teachings will rule the earth for 5,000 years to come.
So Katie Griggs said that she spent time in the presence of Yogi Bhajan before he died and that he gave her her name, Guru Jagat, and he sent her to the West to teach.
I was fortunate enough that Yogi Bhajan was just in the last couple of years on the earth, so I went straight out to Española and got some time with him. I only briefly was with Yogi Bhajan in the several years before he died, and he sent me over to Yoga West, and he said, you're going to teach these women's classes 5 days a week.
Then we meet Philip Deslip, who is an academic, a yogic historian. He's been co-hosting this podcast that I quite liked. It's called Conspirituality, and it came about during the pandemic just to like debunk all this crazy shit that was happening in the yoga world. And now we meet the first generation, these people that came to Yogi Bhajan in the 60s. We have Peter, Leah, Mahankaran Khalsa. So it's interesting because some of these early followers who are much older now, like they're in their 60s, 70s, 80s maybe? No, maybe not. Well, some of them might be. Some of them are still wearing an approximation of secret traditional clothing, like an approximation of it. Some of them are still using their fake names, like the last name Khalsa or Kerr, which were given to them by Yogi Bhajan. And some of them have let it all go. So I did this course a few years ago aimed at teaching yoga to incarcerated people with one of the OG followers. This lady, Krishna Kaur, that was her Kundalini name, Krishna Kaur Khalsa, African-American lady, I think from Brooklyn. She's 83 now. She was born Thelma Oliver and used to be an actress before getting involved with Yogi Bhajan. She was a very charismatic woman. Again, another one of these creative, talented, charismatic people. But yeah, when I did this course, I didn't realize that it was Kundalini focused. And when I got there, well, shit, it took place in Midtown, Mid-City, LA, at Krishna or Thelma's house in the middle of summer, no AC. And there were like 40 of us packed into her living room, and she had us do the never-ending frog squats and the chanting and the panting and all that carry on before teaching the material, none of which that I found to be very useful in a real-world context at all. And I didn't even bother finishing the course. It was just too fucking hot. And on the final day, I literally stayed home in front of my air conditioner all day long. And once my body had returned to homeostasis, I realized what a total crock it all was. Everyone in the course had come via the Kundalini pipeline except for me. And they were all just, you know, dazed and confused, happy looking. And it was a real bummer because Krishna's nonprofit, Yoga for Youth, it does come from a place of wanting to affect positive change, and I'm sure that it has to some extent. She told us about how in the 90s the three strikes policy was enacted. She was living in South Central then, I think. And the three strikes, you're out. So it means like you go to prison forever. It really fucked up the community, and it really destroyed it. And that was her impetus for creating Yoga for Youth, the program, to bring peace and discernment to young people in the prison system and to stop recidivism going forward. So really, really righteous intentions. And I wanted to do that. But the thing is, when it's built on a foundation of sickness, I don't think it can succeed in any real way. You know, the devil falls with the best laid plans. And while it might seem cute to dress up as someone from another time and place and support a charismatic Indian man who tells funny jokes, you ought to look a little bit deeper than that, with all due respect, Ms. Oliver. And thanks for sending my certificate of completion anyway, because I paid. So I got my certificate. You pay to play in LA. So yeah, these first generation people, they talk about the times changing in the 1960s. They talk about Martin Luther King's assassination, the loss of innocence, the war in Vietnam, those people who were speaking to hope and movement and possibility were being killed. They were deeply disillusioned. And then they talk about how the 60s and the 2010s has a lot in common in terms of social movements, political unrest. These things inspire people to look to alternative groups. But yeah, the 60s had people open. And Yogi Bhajan was a culture vulture, hardcore, with, you know, elements of Sikhism, Buddhism, Hindu stuff. He basically made a spiritual mixtape for pop culture. He had mystique, he had charisma, blah, blah, blah. He was really tall, he was imposing. People were drawn to it because he liked long hair. Everyone was eating vegetarian. And the idea was that men and women were equal. Put a pin in that. Men and women are equal. Because later on, Yogi Bhajan uses that to populate his inner circle with women only. And that's when things get really scary. In the 60s, or maybe the early 70s, 3HO opened on Proust Road in Robertson. And so the talking heads say that it was just validating, basically. They weren't just hippies doing yoga, because now they were Sikh. And then we meet Sundeep Morrison, a Sikh activist and journalist, and our expert talking head on this subject. I thought it was interesting and really indicative of what America is, that we have This woman's Sandeep and her last name is Morrison. Hybrids are abound in this documentary, in this country, in this world. And she tells us about the history of Sikhism, a 5,000-year-old religion. They show pictures of the Golden Temple. I remember the Golden Temple. It's actually very, very beautiful. I can't deny a fucking spiritual place. My boyfriend at the time and I took the train to Amritsar. He was pumped. He had been to the Golden Temple all throughout his childhood, and he was definitely not the kind of person to overstate anything. He was like a low-key stoner, very cynical, not spiritual at all. He wanted me to see it, and it was really gorgeous. When you go there, you dress modestly. You cover your head, not with a turban. They just give you like a little bandana. And when I'm in India, I always have a pashmina, because there's always places that you have to like cover your head and shoulders and stuff. So you cover your head and it's just gorgeous. Like, it's cool. It's made of marble. You walk up these stairs and suddenly you're just not in the hustle and bustle of India anymore. It's gorgeous. And inside, like, there's, I don't know, like a big water feature situation outside, and you can hang out there for as long as you want. They serve this dish called kara, and it's like sweet. I can't remember what's in it, but it was absolutely delicious. And you can have that for free. It's really nutritious and delicious. And then inside, it's like a little bell tower kind of thing. In there, their sacred text is there, and somebody is always fanning the book with like a feather or something. Always, for thousands of years, that has been happening. There's never been a time where that book has not been tended to by the devout. I mean, it was an experience. I liked it. To Sandeep Morrison, Sandeep, she says that Sikhism and Kundalini do not intersect. And that's kind of the way that I've always understood it too. From what I understand, Sikhism is like a regional religion. And Kundalini is an aspect of yoga. So to my knowledge, there's Kundalini energy that's supposed to be curled in the base of your spine. And when you unlock that energy using, I don't know, technology, I guess, huffing and puffing, you have a Kundalini awakening. The serpent that lives in the base of your spine like shoots up your spine and out your head and you're enlightened. When I was a teenager, the first rave I ever went to was called Kundalini Rising. I took a bunch of acid, had a mild freak out, and then had a good time. So that's what I know about Kundalini Rising. But Sandeep says Sikhism and Kundalini do not intersect. They're two different worlds. They don't belong in the same sentence, and the conflation of the two is deeply problematic. She's the first person to critique what Yogi Bhajan was doing and identify it for what it was, which is ego, grifting, narcissistic, and opportunistic. Back to Philip Deeslip. So he's sitting in his own space, I think, not the Sonoran Desert Airbnb. He's got a huge library of records behind him and then tons of books. He's right on the edge of his seat. He's in a suit. He's really different to these other people. He's in a suit. He's sitting very straight, right on the edge of his seat. He is not a hippie, and neither is Sandeep Morrison. It's actually a relief to see these sane individuals on the screen amongst all these watery types. So Sandeep says that in the 60s, there was very little knowledge of the faith outside of India. So it's really easy for Yogi Bhajan to create his own pseudo-religion, and that's what he does. He forms Sikh Dharma Inc. with tax benefits and business advantages that religions are afforded in the United States. That's how you do it. You get those tax breaks. The core group of teachers back then was in LA, and Yogi Bhajan sent them out to recruit, essentially. One of them, you can see them in the Woodstock documentary. I think that was like 1960. When was Woodstock? Was it 69 or 67? I think it was 69. And we see some archival footage of like all the Woodstock people doing Kundalini yoga. It's kind of cool. We see footage of ashrams. Eventually they had like 100 ashrams around the US. It expanded overseas. It's this very groovy era. And we learn about the special days in Kundalini. So, I mean, one way that you know it's not a real religion is that one of their special days was Yogi Bhajan's birthday. And then they were really big on the solstice, the summer solstice, big, big deal. And I believe to this day that acolytes go to Yogi Bhajan's old property to celebrate the summer solstice, and then they show footage of all these people. Ugh. I mean, some people might enjoy this. Obviously, a lot of people enjoy this kind of carry-on, but to me, it is just like, get me the fuck out of here. I would hate to be there. People in their turbans and their white robes and they're dancing around and it's all very interpretive. It's just awful. Anyway, they describe it as like the Burning Man of Kundalini. So obviously it's not going to be something that I would want to be doing, but everybody should enjoy life. Go to Burning Man if you must. Then we get into the yogic version of the prosperity gospel. So Yogi Bhajan, he was into cars. He loved his jewels. He loved being in business and he loved his American capitalistic values. They opened the Golden Temple restaurant, which was really popular. And like I said, they have Yogi Tea, a Carl Security. And then this is where we meet Mahini Khalsa and Suri Khalsa. So both these people, Mahini and Suri, they present like as half and half. They're still wearing their turbans or their weird approximations of them, but their clothing from the neck down is more normal seeming. So it's interesting because it gives a picture of being half in and half out. Their age, they're like the children of the ones of the first generation. So they were like born into it. So you kind of see like, oh, that would be really tricky. If that was what you grew up knowing, it would be hard to relinquish all those bells and whistles because they would be such a natural part of who you think you are. Then we hear about the secretariat. So in the 70s, Yogi Bhajan installed a harem of women in positions of power and responsibility around him. Under the guise of equality, he hired only women. So this idea of there being only women around him, it made some people suspicious, but most were too naive to look at this guy and see a person, a man. Their fetishization of him as a holy Indian man prevented them from seeing him for what he was. Just another human, just a man. A horny, manipulative, scary, dangerous man. So no one sounded the alarm on this man. Not until he was dead. And then Pamela Dyson, who was part of the secretariat, her Kundalini name was Premka. Just a couple of years ago, Pamela Dyson, she put out a book, White Bird in a Gilded Cage, I think. And she really blew the lid off this shit. But it took all those years and it took this man to die for somebody to finally, finally tell the truth. Back to the doc. They talk about how there was all this female empowerment narrative and how when Katie Griggs came along in the 2010s or the early 2000s, well, actually the 2010s because she didn't start going by Guru Jagat until 2012. she really took up this mantle. The modern girl boss and that get that paper kind of thing. Katie Griggs, she was touting a kind of lean-in feminism. So we see so much more annoying YouTube footage of her talking about crazy shit. There's this one video. I should put a little clip of it in here. She talks about she's ministering to a room and she's talking about how every woman in that room has probably been assaulted or raped. And then just the way she just starts talking about that, I mean, That's the opposite of being a trauma-informed teacher, because you don't know who's sitting in front of you. But the thing is, she just didn't care. She didn't care about how it made other people feel, if it was actually healing for them. It was just in service of like the feedback of her narcissism and getting people to follow her. All her girl bossing and whatnot, it all coincided with the Me Too movement. So Guru Jagat's followers, they talk about how in the beginning it was very dynamic. Everybody got hired for very little pay, of course. But they were busy, busy, busy. They were going to her house every day. They were launching something new every day. They were going to Cafe Gratitude and just busy, busy with Reality Riffing podcast. Guru Jagat launched a clothing collection. One of her collections was called Robotic Disaster. I mean, people bought this? People thought this was cool. She started the Rama Business School and she just started selling shit like mad. Rama TV popped off. Katie Griggs really understood the importance of social media. At one point, they were raking in like $380,000 a month. She was like an influencer before that was really popping off. Instagram was new. She really understood that. They had the place Rama in Venice. Then there was one in New York. They opened one in Boulder and in Mallorca. Both Boulder and Mallorca went tits up. We'll learn about that later. Guru Jagat published a book. She had this tech utopian optimism about the future that people really liked. And she had very TED Talk energy. She'd basically repackaged Kundalini like a startup. And the vibe was all about global expansion. And this is where she starts to look a little worse for wear. You can physically see the change. She's not sleeping enough. She's getting heavier all over. Even her eyelids are heavier. Her hair looks heavier. And people were like worshipping her. So that flipped and things got dark and heavy, and it just looks, you can see like the spiritual rot setting in. Right, I just had a little sparkling water and weed break. So we come back to Sandeep, our Sikh expert, and she's talking about like the heartbreak of seeing her sacred symbols and the turban with the hair sticking out. And she's talking about it being a bastardization of the culture. And then we go back to Katie Griggs. And she's talking about getting mandates from Yogi Bhajan. He's dead, but she's still getting these downloads. Bhajan died in 2004. And Katie Griggs started going by Guru Jagat in 2012. Before that, she was Kundalini Katie or Katie Day or Athena Day is like her astrology incarnation. She was Astrology Katie. So questions arise.
She believed that she was Yogi Bhajan's chosen heir, but unfortunately it was not based on fact. She said she got to New Mexico because she just had to meet Yogi Bhajan while he was still alive. And she said she spent time with him. He was passing out names and he like whispered in her ear that her name was Guru Jagat.
This is, you know, part of the lineage is you receive a spiritual name.
Right. And how did you receive the name?
I got mine actually directly from Yogi Bhajan.
That's the name that the master gave to me. And a lot of people think I gave it to myself. That's some wacky shit right there. Like when,
And we end the first episode here on this little cliffhanger. The lies of Katie Griggs starting to emerge. And what perfect timing, because it is 7:58 a.m. The sun has risen. I really, really need an iced hazelnut shaken espresso from Satanic Starbucks. So I'm going to leave you dolls here I hope you enjoyed this breakdown of Breath of Fire on Max. And I will be coming back to you with episode 2, one of these mornings, really, really soon. I hope that you're taking care of yourself. You're not being hoodwinked by liars. You're not giving your money away to scammers. You have your identity on lockdown. Check out my other podcast, Luigi's Book Club. Don't know how far I'll get with that. Don't really want to read Infinite Jest. 62 hours on Audible. We shall see. All right, dolls. I will talk to you soon.